copyrighted program created by Rio Grande.
Culver City Police calling all cars. Attention all cars. Broadcast 174. Investigate an explosion and fire at 753 Overland Avenue. That's all.
Of an ambulance. The roar of a police car. The clanging of fire engines. 50 million miles a year they drive. 50 million miles a year with Rio Grande cracked gasoline. They start, stop, cruise slow, long economical miles.
Calling car 52, a robbery at 934 Mullen Avenue, 934 Mullen
Avenue. With a roar and siren screaming, they race through city streets to protect your lives and property. Rio Grande is pardonably proud of the distinguished service rendered only by cracked gasoline in powering more police cars, fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency equipment wherever it is sold than any other brand. No other test for gasoline compares with this yearly 50 million mile record. It is the most conclusive, convincing proof of quality ever presented to Western motorists. The exclusive Sinclair refining process is responsible for this difference between Rio Grande cracked gasoline and ordinary brands. For in the West, only Rio Grande can use this process. Why use old-fashioned, sluggish gasoline? Profit from the exhaustive tests of government engineers. See your Rio Grande dealer tomorrow. Specify Rio Grande cracked gasoline for your own car and get police car performance. Tonight we have in the studio Detective Lieutenant R.F. Lynch, head of the Detective Division of the Culver City Police. Lieutenant Lynch.
Good evening. The story you will hear tonight is one that we of the Culver City Police Department are proud of. It is a case where, from the very beginning, the odds were against us. Every move we made was blocked by one thing or another until at times it seemed almost impossible that our aims would be accomplished. But, thanks to the more than willing cooperation of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Office, we were able, after many disappointments, to solve our case and place the criminal in custody. It is interesting to note that the means we used in identifying one of the criminals is the only time on record such a procedure has been followed. In closing, I would like to express my thanks on behalf of the Culver City Police Department to Sheriff Eugene Biscalou and to Captain Nuremberg, head of the Los Angeles County Bureau of Identification, for the valuable assistance they gave in this case.
December 9th, 1928, shortly before 10 p.m. Aside from an occasional auto horn, no sound breaks the stillness of the night. Culver City has settled into the peaceful quiet of a slumbering community. Inside a large and apparently deserted barn on Overland Avenue, just outside the city proper, the figure of a man can be seen moving about in the dim light cast from one green-shaded electric light bulb. All about him, huge tanks cast eerie shadows, give forth a strange odor. Pausing for an instant before one of these, the man reaches into his pocket, extracts a cigarette, reaches again, returns with a match. For a moment, he stands looking about. Then, with a quick gesture, strikes the match on the nearby tank. His cigarette lit. Another quick gesture sends the smoldering match sailing across the room to land in a maze of winding copper pipes where it lies sputtering feebly, slowly dying out. Then suddenly it comes to life again with renewed vigor, seems to gain strength, ignites a thin trickle of liquid that runs from a leak in one of the grotesque-looking tanks. Deliberately, a thin trail of flame licks a path across the floor, greedily devours the fuel before it, heads directly for the base of the tank. And as it reaches a groping finger of flame up to the source of its food, the man turns, sees it, makes one desperate lunge. bare hands outstretched as though to smother it. But as his fear-crazed eyes watch, the flame reaches its destination. It lingers a brief split second. Then... Residents for miles around, hearing the ground-shaking explosion rush from their homes, find the sky tinged with red as huge flames shoot hundreds of feet into the air above all the remains of the old barn. And in the fire station, an alarm bell informs Fire Chief Frank Wilson of the explosion, galvanizes to sudden action every available piece of fire equipment. Responding also to the alarm is Captain of Detectives R.F. Lynch, accompanied by several officers from the Culver City Police Department.
What do you make of it, Chief?
Well, still explosion, Lynch. Must have been hundreds of gallons of alcohol in there, stored in tanks. Still plenty left.
I heard someone screaming in there, officer, just after the explosion. I heard it.
You sure of that?
Yeah, I know there was someone screaming. There couldn't be any mistake about it. It was awful.
Not much chance of anybody being alive inside that furnace.
Well, looks like a clear space there. The fire hasn't reached yet. Might get in if we hurry.
Come on, let's go.
Right.
Look, over there by that tank that's burning.
Yeah, looks like a man, all right. Burned or crisp.
That burning tank of alcohol's going to let go in a minute and spill all over him. Come on, we've got to get him.
You can't do it, Lynch. That place is all set to blow.
If we don't get that fellow out of there now, how am I supposed to know who he was? That alcohol will demolish him. Come on, one of you grab that rope there, and we'll see if we can drag him out.
Take it.
If that tank starts spilling, somebody yell and loud.
You're taking a big chance, Lynch.
Yeah, come on. Here. Get this rope around his feet, and we can drag him from a safer distance.
It's getting too hot, Lynch.
There. Now let's get out of here. Come on. Hurry. This is all right. Now give me a hand with this rope.
Sit.
Heave.
Hurry it up, Lynch. That tank's coming down.
Yeah, I see it.
There he is.
Okay. Now if we can carry him outside, we'll see what we got.
Practically nothing, if you ask me. You'll never get an identification of this one.
Save your breath, Ed, and give me a hand here. Easy. There. Now, come on. Let's get out of here before the whole place falls down.
Struggling under the weight of the burned man, Lynch and his companion manage to reach the open air as the entire section of barn they were just in collapses into a shambles of burning wood. And once clear, a flashlight reveals the body to be so badly burned that there is apparently no single clue as to its identity.
I told you we were wasting our time in there. How are you going to find out who this fellow was when there's nothing left of him?
Well, frankly, I don't know. Hold that flash here while I look him over.
Okay.
Yeah. No chance of anybody recognizing him by his face, that's certain. No clothing left. Hey, bring that flash down here a little closer, will you? Yeah, that's got it.
What's up?
Looks like a tattoo mark here on the back of his arm. You see here where it isn't burnt? See, what does it say? Manila. P.I. 1919. That's a great help.
Better than nothing at all.
Maybe.
Hello, Lynch. What's going on here?
Oh, hello, Cecil. Little still blew up. Made ashes out of this bird.
Yeah? I just got in on the train in time to hear the excitement. Drove out here as fast as I could.
Well, I've been trying to get an identification on him, but so far, the only thing I've got is this tattoo mark. Manila, P.I. 1919. Probably an ex-sailor or soldier.
And what's the reason for wanting an identification so badly?
Mainly the fact that I'd like to get a line on the bunch who ran this still. I've been trying to find it for months. Now that I have, the only person who might be able to tell me anything is burnt to a crisp.
Well, might as well call a wagon and take him into the morgue. Not much we can do out here till this fire's over.
Yeah. If Wilson doesn't get it under control soon, there's not going to be enough left of it to bother looking through. Oh, well, come on. Let's phone for the wagon. I'm getting tired of this noise.
For several hours, Chief Wilson directs his department in an attempt to extinguish the alcohol-fed blaze. And finally, as the first rays of the morning sun announce a new day, the last flame gives way in its stubborn battle and subsides into a smoldering ruin. And at the morgue, Captain Lynch and Captain Cecil Truschell, head of the motorcycle division, mull over the burned body and make another vain attempt to find some bit of identification.
Oh, this spot on his back looks as though there'd been more tattooing, Lynch.
Yeah, but what does it say?
That I couldn't tell you.
That's the trouble. Aside from the one bit of tattooing on his arm, which does us practically no good, we have absolutely nothing to go on.
How about fingerprints? I wonder if we could get anything there.
From those fingers? Not a chance. Nothing left to print with.
Well, looks kind of hopeless.
Listen, Cecil, I've got an idea. How about us calling up Sheriff Biscoe in Los Angeles and seeing if he can help us? They've got a lot of new fingerprint and identification equipment in there. Might have something new.
Can't hurt any. It's a cinch we're stopped cold at this end.
And that's just what I'm going to do. Give me that phone.
Thus, in response to Lynch's call, Captain Nuremberg of the Identification Bureau drives to Culver City, pulls up in front of the morgue, and once inside, he meets Lynch and Truchel.
Well, not much to go on, is there?
Not much.
Now, let me see these fingers. No chance of a print.
Yeah, that's what we figured.
There's one small chance, though, that we can try. Something I've never done before.
What's that?
Attempt to restore the skin of the fingers to normal by soaking them in alcohol and powdering them.
You think it might work?
I can't say definitely. I know that it's just possible. But it will be experimental completely.
Well, for me, I say let's try it. If it works, we're ahead. If it doesn't, what have we lost?
Accordingly, with all arrangements made, Nuremberg returns to his laboratory to make preparations for the experiment, while Truchel, accompanied by Police Judge Randall, drives to the burned shack, begins an investigation.
Well, looks like this is where someone lived.
Yeah, that old iron bed there. Probably a sort of general hangout and living quarters for that poor fellow that got burned and the rest of the gang.
What's all this junk over here?
I don't know. Looks like what is left of a chest of drawers or something.
About the only thing that didn't burn.
Yeah.
You think you'll get anywhere with that fingerprint idea, Cecil?
Oh, I don't know, Judge. It's a chance. Lynch is pretty enthusiastic over it.
More power to him. It's about the slimmest lead I've ever heard of.
Hello. What's this?
You find something?
I don't know. Looks like an old wallet. Yeah. That's what it is.
Anything in it?
Oh, some papers. Let me see. Here's an old speed ticket. Only wait a minute. It's not so old. Made out on December 8th.
Hey, why? Well, the day before yesterday.
Yeah. Let's see if I can make out the name on it. Harry A. H.O.W. Howard. Harry A. Howard. Well, you remember that name, don't you, Judge?
Yeah. Say, wasn't he the fellow we had up for bootlegging a couple of times?
Right. Lynch and I have been trying to connect him with some big time still for a long time. And it looks like we were right. Let's see what we got here. Hereby ordered to appear in county court. Yeah, and here's the officer's name who gave it. Say, I've got an idea that this little ticket is going to make a lot of difference in this case, Judge.
And a quick check with the Los Angeles traffic officer proves conclusively that the Howard on the traffic ticket and the Howard Truchel knows are one and the same man. With this knowledge, Truchel hurries back to Culver City, informs Lynch of his discovery. Then the two officers settle down to await the arrival of Nuremberg and the start of their identification experiment. And at 10 the next morning, after a sleepless night, they greet the fingerprint expert, hurried to the morgue.
How are you going about this thing, Nuremberg?
Well, the first thing we've got to do is strip the skin from the fingertips, and we've got to be careful doing it, too. That's the first place we can go wrong.
What do we do with it when we get it?
Soak it in alcohol for 3 days. That should restore it to a fair degree of normality, at least enough to powder. Then, if everything goes well, we photograph the results and get a set of fingerprints. Of course, the odds are that we won't get anything, but there's that one chance.
I've got a hunch it'll work, Nuremberg. A strong hunch. And so far, my hunches have been 100% right. Come on, let's get started.
Throughout the morning, skilled surgeon, carefully removing the charred skin from the fingertip container of alcohol to soak. It is a nerve-stretching task, and when, shortly after noon, the expert straightens up from his work, pronounces the first step of the experiment finished, both Truchel and Lynch give a long, suppressed sigh of relief. So far, so good. And now, with 3 long days to wait, Lynch and Truchel pick up the former thread of evidence. Start a map, Harry A. Howard. But first, they make another search of the burned waste paper container buried under a pile of charred embers. In it, they find several scraps of torn paper.
Get rid of some love letters or something.
Look more like receipts, sales slips of some kind.
Look here. These 3 pieces here are right.
This is a receipt. Wait. Here's an initial signature.
Yeah? K.H. stand for Harry A. Howard, right?
Looks like it, Cecil.
We're on the right track. Now all we've got to do is to find Howard and pin it on him. He won't have a leg to stand on.
But finding the ex-bootlegger, Harry Howard, isn't as easy as it seems. For 2 days, the men track down all his known haunts, find the same answer. Howard has not been seen for some time. Several friends of his are brought in, questioned, but each one denies any knowledge of Howard's whereabouts. And by the morning of the third day, Lynch and Truchel begin to realize that things are not just what they might be. And now the search for Howard is put aside for the continuation of Nuremberg's experiment. In his laboratory in Los Angeles, Lynch and Truchel watch anxiously as the scientist begins the second step, that of powdering the now thoroughly soaked fingertips.
You see here how the skin has turned white, resumed its appearance of human skin rather than parchment.
Yeah, you can tell what it is, all right.
Now, the next thing is to make the tiny indentations or lines stand out. You see, unlike the usual method of fingerprinting, that is, rolling the fingers in ink and then getting an impression from pressure on a pad, we've got to photograph these tiny pieces. Naturally, the way they are, there's no contrast. Everything looks white. So, we take this dark powder preparation, so, and dust it into the crevices. Then we blow off the excess. And there you see a perfect fingertip.
By George, Nuremberg, you've got something there.
I hope so.
Well, what now? Photograph?
That's right. This lens is specially constructed to take sharp close-up pictures of small objects. Now, I'm going to set this glove-like fingertip on the end of this pencil. So. And set it up here with this light on it. Like this.
You mean you're going to have to set each one up like that and take a picture?
That's right. Slow, but if it works, sure.
Thus, for a space of time that seemed endless, the patient Nuremberg photographed each of the five tips of one hand, repeats with the five from the other. And at last, after 2 hours of careful work, the plates are sent to be developed and printed. Impatient for the results, Lynch and Truchel go with them. Watch quietly as the negatives are developed. Wait eagerly as the first carbon print begins to trace a pattern on the white sheet of photographic paper.
Look, Cecil, there's something coming out.
Yeah.
Tiny little circular lines. Fingerprints.
Why, it's almost unbelievable, Lynch, that anyone could start with what Nuremberg had and finish with this. A perfect set of prints.
Now that we've got them, they might be useless.
That's right. Only somehow I have a feeling...
Yeah, so have I.
Well, there you are, Lieutenant. A perfect set, clean as a whistle.
How long do we have to wait now?
Oh, about 5 minutes, just till they get a hypo bath to fix them. Then they're all yours.
Perfect. Only if you could make that 4 minutes, I'd appreciate it. My nerves are at the point now where one extra minute and I think they'll bust.
Okay, Lieutenant. I'll see what I can do. Can't have any busted nerves lying around here. No room for them in a dark room.
And in the allotted time, Lynch and Truchel find themselves in possession of the long-awaited prints. Immediately, they start the first move towards an identification, that of checking with the files in the Los Angeles Sheriff's Fingerprint Bureau. Also, a copy of the prints with a description of the tattoo marks found on the dead man's arm is sent to the War Department with a request for information regarding same. And in a short time, their search of the files comes to an abrupt end as a card bearing the name James C. Duane and an identical set of fingerprints comes to light. Every classification is identical. Under the name, there is a line which reads, held for San Francisco police in connection with diamond theft. Obviously, their dead man is no other than one James C. Duane, ex-diamond thief. Then, 2 days later, word comes from the War Department via teletype.
Regarding your request for information, fingerprints and general description, that of one Dennis James Curtis, enlisted in the United States Navy from San Francisco, April 16, 1919. Discharged May 1920 for bad conduct. Home address given as 3420 San Jose Avenue, Alameda, California. Respectfully, George A. Holmes, Commander in Charge of Naval Personnel, Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. And in response to a telegram, Duane, alias Curtis's father, makes the trip down from Alameda, identifies his son's remains, and puts an end once and for all to all speculations as to his identity. And Lynch and Truchel begin a minute search for the missing Howard. But this time as before, their efforts are blocked at every turn. No one knows where Howard is. No one knows anything about his connection with the Burns still. No one apparently knows anything, and at last, after 2 months of constant seeking, the officers conclude that their man has left town for good. Relax in their search. Then one day, Lynch receives a call from a constable he knows, a call asking his assistance in staking out a house in the West Adams district in order to catch a man wanted on a theft charge. Accordingly, Lynch drives over, meets the constable. Casually, he looks over the arrest warrant, then suddenly stiffens to attention.
Hey, is this the fellow you're going after?
Yeah, why?
Harry Albitz. Harry Howard's brother-in-law.
Yeah, who's Harry Howard?
A gent Truchel and I have been looking for months. He's the lad behind one of the biggest steel outfits in town. I've got a warrant for his arrest right in my pocket. Been carrying it there just in case I happen to run into him sometime.
I see. What's this Albitz got to do with him?
He was mixed up with him in a couple of bootlegging raps we nabbed Howard on. Claims to be his brother-in-law.
Nice family. Albitz is wanted for auto theft in Los Angeles.
Yeah, let's get out to this house. I'd like to give it the once-over and see if I can get a lead as to where Howard is. That's one person I'm anxious to get my hands on.
Probably won't find anything. People like this aren't apt to leave their calling cards lying around. However, I still want Albitz, so let's go.
And once at the house, Constable Jennings and Lynch, finding no one home, make a quick search. Find in a drawer in the bedroom something that pleases Lynch immensely.
This has got it. Just the thing I've been looking for.
What's that?
This letter here from Harry Howard with a return address in Ontario, California. And I thought he was smart. Come on, Jennings. We're going to take a fast tour to Ontario.
What, now?
You bet your life now. I'm not wasting any time. 2 months I've spent looking in every alley, huck shop, pool hall, and bootlegging joint. And now it looks as though maybe I found him. Come on. Next stop, Ontario.
Not wanting to waste the time necessary to return to Culver City and locate Truchel, Lynch and his companion, Constable Jennings, start a mad drive to the foothill town of Ontario. Mile after mile, they drive at breakneck speed. And inside of 30 minutes, they pull to a grinding stop in front of the Ontario police station. A brief stop there, long enough to enlist the aid of a local officer, and they resume the journey. This time, stopping down the street from a small white house bearing the address found on the letter. Quietly, Lynch makes the plans. Issues instructions.
Now, there's no way of telling how many we're going to find in there. But the way I've got it figured, if we surprise them, we'll have a good chance of grabbing them before they know what's happened.
Well, it sounds logical, no?
Jennings, suppose you take the west side of the house.
Right.
You the back door. I'll go in the front way.
Right.
When you hear me inside, you come in through the back door fast. If they start out first, nail them. Don't let anyone get away until we know who we have. Understand?
Perfect.
Okay, and be careful. I don't know much about this Howard lad, but I understand he carries a gun. And he isn't particular who he uses it on. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm not anxious to get filled with lead.
Okay, then. Let's go.
Slowly, quietly, the three men approach the little white house. Wordlessly, Jennings takes his position at the side, under the windows. The Ontario officer at the back door. Then, with all in readiness, Lynch eases up the front steps onto the porch. Quietly tries the door, finds it locked. A moment's hesitation, then his mind made up, Lieutenant Lynch goes into 215-pound action.
Beat it, Harry, it's the law.
Here we are, all of you. The house is surrounded.
Says you, copper.
Round up these people, Jennings. I'm going after Howard.
All right. All of you, keep away from those shotguns or you get hurt. Come on, you keep away from those guns.
Come out of that room, Howard.
Come on,
all right, I will. All right, Howard, drop that gun.
I'm nuts.
I said drop that gun.
Lay off me, you big flatfoot.
Stop playing games, and I will.
Lay on you.
You ready to go with me now, Howard?
I haven't got anything on me.
No? Well, take a look at this warrant. I've been carrying it for about 2 months now, just waiting for this moment. We know all about you. Got your autograph on a couple of pieces of paper that are good for about 10 or 15 years in the pen. What do you think of that?
I think you're nuts.
That's all right, too. Only think this over. We know you're the gent behind the still that blew up. We know that because we found your signature all over those sales slips.
I thought everything burned.
Come on, Howard. That did it. Let's you and I talk it over on the way back to jail.
All right. I'll talk, and I'll tell you some things that'll surprise you, too. Things that'll surprise you plenty.
And Harry Howard did talk, all the way back to Culver City, where he was lodged in jail on charges of operating a still. But when he finished, the only thing he had done was to put himself behind bars for some time to come. Thus, through the combination of the elements of chance, patience, and science, what might have turned out to be an unsolved case ended with the criminal in jail and our records marked solved.
Thank you, Lieutenant Lynch. Rio Grande Cracked is known as the gasoline of police car performance in the emergency equipment of the second largest county in the United States, Coconino County, Arizona. The largest city in the West, Los Angeles. Oakland, Berkeley, Marysville, Fresno, Santa Barbara, Pasadena, Monterey Park, San Diego, Santa Barbara County, Orange County, San Diego County, Las Vegas, Nevada, Phoenix, Arizona, Maricopa County, Arizona, and many, many other cities and counties. Wherever you buy Rio Grande cracked gasoline, you can buy Sinclair motor oils, refined from the highest priced and oldest Pennsylvania and mid-continent crude oils. They're de-waxed, de-jellied, super refined, and made available to you at all Rio Grande stations in tamper-proof cans. Whenever you buy Rio Grande cracked gasoline, get your copy of Calling All Cars News. You'll enjoy the featured articles, pictures of wanted criminals with rewards up to $10,000. Get police car performance with Rio Grande cracked gasoline and Sinclair motor oils at your independent Rio Grande dealer tomorrow.
City Police calling all cars. Attention all cars. Cancellation. Broadcast 174. Regarding an explosion and fire. Suspect is now in custody. That's all.
Narrator, Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for Rio Grande.